Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to episode 11 of The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects. I'm your host, Danielle Robay. We have been tracking down names on lead detective Lou Smith's database of suspects with a view to either eliminate them from suspicion for the murder for good or else open a proper investigation into their whereabouts the night JonBenet was killed. And now our chief investigator, Doug Longini, is meeting JonBenet's older stepbrother, John Andrew Ramsey, to update him on our progress. The question for our team now is this. After 23 years, is our tactic of old-fashioned investigative work, tracking down names, knocking on doors, still the best way to go about solving this case?
So it's still, and I think it probably has crossed your mind, I want to hear your thoughts. I understand collecting DNA is a goal here, and a good one, but I also think just contacting people and talking to them or emailing them, not everyone will respond, but it seems like that's an avenue that has not been pursued enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's kind of shocking, you know, every time you knock on someone's door and they say it's the first time they've been contacted. But yeah, at 23 years into this, it's certainly a good place to start. And it seems like we're able to kind of get at least a feel for people. You know, can you rule them out 100%? No. But, it certainly helps. There's definite value in it, and it certainly beats speculating for years and years and wringing your hands over this and just investigating over the keyboard. It's not efficient.
The other issue that has troubled Doug and the team is why. For several of the suspects we've investigated over the course of this podcast, they have still remained persons of interest 2 decades after the murder.
John, any thoughts on why, in one case, you and I are first persons to knock on somebody's door? It would have been a logical person. It doesn't seem likely that that person had anything to do with it, but there was a lot of curiosity before we got there, but we were the first ones to knock on that door. What do you think that's about? Why haven't the police or, you know, you name it, done a little more of that sort of thing?
I wish I had a good answer, because that's a question I'm getting from a lot of people following the podcast is, you know, why are you doing this? Why didn't the police do this? And I don't know that answer. I mean, I can speculate and assume that, you know, their focus was on our family for the longest time, and that they, you know, they did look at some people like John Eustace, but did they go down the next level? Sure doesn't seem like it.
Since the very beginning of this case, from the moment John Ramsey made the horrific discovery of his daughter's body in his basement, it has seemed that the research for JonBenet's killer has been hampered, or at the very least, defined by a hostility between the Boulder police and the Ramsey family. For John Andrew, at least, it's time to draw a line under that, for JonBenet's sake.
At the end of the day, we need the Boulder police to solve this. The ball's in their court. We're hitched to them. I think they ultimately could solve this, right? And I understand that there's laws that govern this, and they have obligations to keep things private. But at the same time, it's been 23 very long years, for my family and my dad have hunted for this killer without any sort of confirmation or information sharing between the two sides. It's time that the Boulder authorities kind of take a new tack here and say, okay, you know, we're going to try something different, right? And this is all so that we can accelerate finding the killer. I mean, from our position, it would be easy to carry grudges and anger towards the Boulder police, but what we want are results. We want the truth. And it's going to take a concerted effort by the Boulder authorities to get to that. But we're willing, we want to work with them, and it's time we do that. It's time they do that.
Do you have something very specific in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there would be tremendous value if we could simply cross-reference lists of suspects to see if they've already tested DNA. And so we don't have to go through years of speculation on any one individual.
And it seems like you could sit down with them.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I want them to do their job, and we'll help to whatever extent that is.
Good old-fashioned investigative detective work is one thing, and a long overdue collaboration with the Boulder PD would certainly add to that investigation. But as Doug and John Andrew Ramsey discuss, and as we've been told throughout our investigations, the key to this case all along has lain in the DNA samples that were taken, or in some cases, crucially not taken, from the crime scene.
The first DNA is done 22, 23 years ago. A second set of DNA tests are done in 2008. Without being a DNA expert, I think everybody listening to this podcast, everybody knows that there's great advances from year to year to year in DNA technology and analysis. This is now 2020. It seems like more could be done. Is that what you think too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
When I was putting together a special on the case in 2016, we interviewed a DNA forensic expert and analyst named Richard Eichelenboom. I had done work with Richard. Would you be interested in talking with him?
Yeah, I would love to. It's, you know, a lot of this with DNA is me trying to piece it together. And I can tell you, I think I was a C student in high school biology. So it would be good to speak to an expert.
All right. Well, why don't we give him a call?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to talk to him.
I love solving puzzles. That's what true crime is to me, after all, just one big puzzle. When I want to take a break from the dark stuff, though, I like to lighten up my puzzle time with Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a puzzle game where every level feels like uncovering a new layer in a story, one you get to take part in. I love that the game is challenging while not being frustrating. The best part for me is when I have to choose the fiends I want on my team for each level. I have to make sure I'm playing the best fiends possible based on their skill sets, and since every level is different, it requires me to choose wisely for every challenge. The more I play, the more fun it gets. Plus, you don't need the internet to play, so anytime I want a little entertainment, Best Fiends is my go-to. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play online. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Richard Eichelenboom is a forensic scientist who has examined hundreds of crime scenes and worked closely with law enforcement agencies across America and the world. Since 2005, he has led one of the world's foremost DNA laboratories, the Independent Forensic Services Lab, based in the Netherlands, Europe. Doug gives him a call.
Good morning.
Hey, Richard. Also on the line here is John Andrew Ramsey.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Richard.
And JonBenet Ramsey was his sister and is clearly interested in seeing progress. But I'm calling you because, you know, it strikes me you had DNA in 1998 and then you have another set of tests in 2008. You know the DNA world and DNA technology, but me as just a regular citizen, John as a citizen, it strikes us. DNA is something that evolves over the years, year after year after year. Things, to me anyway, seem to get better, more precise, and more a really great tool. So in 2020, what's your perspective on what could be done in this case?
Yeah, a lot. I still assume that all the evidence is still there. I cannot imagine that somebody would throw away any evidence in this case. So if all the evidence is there, there's so much evidence found on the body of JonBenet that you can investigate. For instance, the garrote, the rope, fingernails, hair samples, neck samples. So there's all kinds of evidence which can be investigated again. Another very important investigation, which was actually possible in 2008, was Y chromosomal DNA.
In the simplest terms, Y chromosomes are unique to males. As a girl, JonBenet would have no Y chromosomes in her DNA, meaning any found would belong to someone else, potentially her killer.
And I still think you should do that because with all the doubt around the family and these discussions, Y chromosome DNA is not present in JonBenet. They also deduce a profile, which is not matching the family members. So in that sense, you want to know who that unknown donor is, but it could also be a combination of more than one unknown person donating DNA to samples they took from the long johns, for instance, and from the fingernails. So what you want to do is you want to, well, make these profiles better. You want to have a clear view of the unknown donors of DNA on JonBenet.
Does that mean using tests today in 2020? I call them tests, but procedures,
yeah,
that were not necessarily available back in the day.
Yes, of course. We work much more sensitive. We can get these complex mixtures because complex mixtures were obtained. So there was not only DNA of JonBenet present in some of the samples, but from other persons and maybe more than two. So if you want to find out who those donors are, you need better profiles. You have a lot of DNA of the victim in your samples. That makes it extremely difficult. So that's why I say the Y chromosomal DNA, not only, but just as an extra tool to help this.
At the time of JonBenet's death, DNA profiling was in its infancy. And as Richard explains, that meant that what today's forensic scientists would consider standard procedures were not carried out.
What they did was kind of basic at the time, and they took too much of the DNA of the victim, JonBenet herself. You can see that. So she's the main donor, the major donor in those samples. And what you actually want is, of course, you want the major donor of the perpetrator who did this to her. There's no doubt about it, is looking at all the pictures of this case, that there was a lot of contact between perpetrator and JonBenet.
What is the process to do that?
Yeah, they could have done it in 2008. When we start taking samples from the body, for instance, or the fingernails, or we cut a small piece of the long johns, then we make a DNA extract. And the DNA extract is just a fluid which contains DNA of the sample. And then you can do different kinds of tests on that DNA extract. You can do Y chromosomal DNA, autosomal DNA, mitochondrial DNA, for instance. But Y chromosomal DNA is so helpful because you will find only male donors. So JonBenet is out of there.
Yep.
And then another thing which Y chromosomal is very strong for, or known for, is that you can do something like racial profiling. And you can look at, okay, what kind of population could this donor belong to? That's also very helpful if you want to find an unknown donor.
And would the Y chromosome allow you to do a familial search within CODIS? Or do you need more than that?
CODIS is the acronym for the FBI's Combined DNA Index System. Detectives can use CODIS to run searches of DNA profiles from crime scenes to see if they match profiles from other crime scenes or those of convicted offenders. Find a match, and chances are you've got your offender. It is a powerful tool, but it is not the only resource available. As we have already heard, in the case of the Golden State Killer, familial DNA data from resources such as Ancestry.com and 23andMe can also be utilized to find a match.
What you'd have known with the Golden State Killer is like you could do this kind of tests as well. So you're going to look into the background of this perpetrator or at least the donor of the unknown DNA. So yeah, that would be helpful.
As Richard explains, even such powerful resources as CODIS and familial profiling sites such as 23andMe are not always straightforward to use.
These familial searches don't work very well with mixtures. And I know all these familial DNA testing companies cannot work with forensic samples. So they need a good sample. But DNA you have now is not useful for that.
Okay. So you need to, so your first point when we started talking here was there are likely other pieces of evidence that contain DNA and perhaps the foreign unknown DNA, perhaps of an intruder. Is that right?
I think that with everything which is there, and it's a long list, yep, you should be able to find at least one or two. And of course, what we try to do in high-profile cases is try to find more than one unknown. You want to find the same unknown person from several different items because that increases the criminalistic value of your sample. Then you're getting close to knowing who could have been the perpetrator. Not a coincidence or contamination by someone, but somebody who consistently leaves his DNA on the carotid, for instance. So there's so much there, so much evidence there, which you can still investigate and which there still is a chance to get a good profile from, not being clouded by the DNA of JonBenet.
Yeah, I think whoever leaves a 3-page handwritten ransom note was not looking to cover up, you know, they weren't wearing gloves when they tied the garage, for instance. So you build out a profile, it would give you more conclusive evidence that this person was involved in the murder and it just wasn't a contamination.
Yeah.
Richard outlines exactly how advances in DNA profiling technology could be used to find the killer of John Andrews' little sister.
What can you do from a search perspective there?
CODIS is a very strong searching tool, but you have to use all its capabilities. I've worked with a lot of police forces here, and I don't see that they use all its capabilities. For instance, Y chromosome DNA is hardly present in CODIS, which is a shame because that would be a good searching tool as well. It's kind of familiar DNA searching. And then the other thing which they can do is non-stringent one-time searches, for instance.
Yep.
And then you look with a profile, but you don't expect or you don't need a full match anymore. And they should have done it in this case all along. I didn't see that they did that. But then because you're not sure about this unknown donor, but you have a kind of a feeling, well, this could be his profile. You go to CODIS and then search it. And then, of course, if you get a match, you're not going to say, well, this is the guy and we're going to, well, give him the death sentence. No, you're going to, it's a start.
Yep.
And it's just DNA always. DNA is not like, okay, this the magical wand. No, DNA is the start of the investigation. When we do our cases, we want to have more than one profile.
I think that's super interesting. The way I look at it, if there's 10 markers today and you do a search based on 9 markers, let's say, are you going to get tens of thousands of results or are you not likely to get any? How would that kind of play out?
That's the problem. The databases are getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And I would also search a foreign database, for instance. CODIS can connect easily to Europe and to other countries which use it. And the FBI gave away this CODIS database. So that's possible. But yeah, the problem is, of course, the bigger the database, the bigger the chance on a coincidental match. So you have to be careful if you have so many people in your database that you get a coincidental match.
You've seen that work.
Yeah, I've seen it work. In Holland, we do it all the time. And we get lots. And then in England, the United Kingdom, they started with this and they had every profile they make, they just kind of put in the database. They don't have the stringent rules about putting people in the database. As soon as they do a population investigation, all these people stay in the database. And it's extremely helpful. 1 out of 2 cases is a match in the database in the United Kingdom. So the same will happen here if you search. If you do non-stringent searches, so that means that you are allowing for small mismatches, you will get maybe thousands of people. And then you can search, okay, where are these people in the vicinity, or the matches start with the matches in the vicinity, or in Colorado at least, or maybe in Denver, and or how old they were in 1996. That's the kind of stuff. So that of course, that's a lot of work. But yeah, this case is I think, with all the commotion, it's worth it to do this kind of work and put a couple of police officers on it and DNA sign. Well, what I would do is just start with the DNA. I would redo all the DNA. And then, you, of course, you get already the question, okay, who's this unknown?
Once again, the bottom line is that the original DNA testing of evidence at the crime scene needs to be revisited.
Retest the physical items.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know why. I looked through everything I could find and the disclosure stuff, but still, it's very limited. Maybe they're working on it now. But yeah, how much time do you need to find a good profile? It's a lot of work, but in 3-4 months, you will find something.
The science is complicated, but it seems there's also the possibility that the original DNA testing done of the evidence at JonBenet's crime scene is not only obsolete, but fundamentally flawed.
So going back to CODIS, the CODIS profile that's been submitted, you're saying that potentially that we could have submitted the wrong one.
Yeah.
And so it's up to interpretation by the analyst. The analyst ultimately says these are the 13 markers or 10 markers that I think should be submitted to CODIS. Is that correct?
Yeah. So and then CODIS comes back with a list, or it depends, of persons of interest.
So if you're sitting in our shoes here, your recommendation is test new items.
Yeah.
Strengthen the existing profile, or build out a new profile, and then a non-stringent, loosen the standards by which you search against CODIS.
Yes.
Okay. Simple enough.
Yeah, it really is not that difficult. I cannot imagine you, for me, this case should be solvable.
I agree.
On paper, it seems simple, but as over 2 decades of conjecture, conspiracy, dead ends, and false leads have shown, little about this case has proved in any way simple. And as John Andrew is all too aware, all of that crucial crime scene evidence has been gathering dust for the last 23 years.
Is there concern that the degradation of the physical specimens or the pieces of evidence, I mean, some of this stuff's obviously 23 years old. If we retest it, are we destroying evidence, or is there any concern around that?
Yeah, of course. Plus, DNA is prone to damage a little bit more than like blood, saliva. There's no doubt about it. We did a lot of those testing, and you can see it goes back over time. So the state of Colorado is very dry, which is extremely good for your DNA. In Holland, our air humidity is like 80-90%, which is very bad for your DNA. Dry air, which means that's good for your DNA. DNA is no reason it would break down over the 24 years. So I worked on DNA case in Colorado, and we got good results.
Yeah, very interesting. It's been super helpful, Richard. I mean, I kind of try to Google these answers, and it's frustrating. So to talk to an expert is very, very helpful.
Yeah, it's complicated. I don't say this is easy.
Yep.
This work is a lot of manual labor for police and for the DNA scientists. So yeah, you need to make scientists free to do this kind of work and let them puzzle with it. And yeah, of course, if you have 7 months backlog, you're not really waiting to get this kind of type of work on your desk.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Richard Eichelenboom's insight has been eye-opening. But where does that leave our investigation?
So, Doug, I mean, it was a pretty interesting phone call there with Richard. I'd be curious what you think next steps are.
I think when Richard brings up the concept of a DNA profile with not every one of the numbers in the comparison is fascinating, because it's not pie in the sky thinking. As Richard pointed out, it's done in the Netherlands. It's done in Great Britain, in the UK. And I know from speaking to Richard in the past, it has found the perpetrator. I guess it's not been done here in the United States, but because in your sister's case, there's a mix between your sister and the unknown person, and one of those numbers could be off. And and that would make, when you go into the FBI system, that's that, you know? It's an automated system. All the numbers have to match. If they don't match, bingo, they're out. And and there is no match. But what if one of the numbers was wrong? There's going to be a sizable number of people. I don't know what that size is, but at the same time, some of them are going to be too old or too young at the time, or they didn't live anywhere near. So ultimately, you are going to weed out a lot of people, but it does take some work, as you said. It's just not, you put the number in, and then they send you back, and they say yes or no, and you don't really have to do any work. And there's no reason to not test the evidence that's available in a case that has fascinated the American people now for 23 years and has been a weight on your family's shoulder that hardly that I could describe for that long also.
I think this was super interesting talking to Richard. You know, the non-stringent search of CODIS is an angle I wasn't aware of, and it's exactly what we're looking for, right? Just how do we expand the net? How do we make the, how do we up our chances of getting a match? And that's it.
We're into an area where we, as just regular people, we really don't have a sense of what can be done and what the future is for these DNA techniques. But it strikes me that there's more of them out there right now in 2020 than have been used on your sister's case.
Yeah, no, without a doubt.
The conclusion seems clear. 21st century DNA profiling will be the key to finding JonBenet's murderer, but only if the Boulder authorities are willing to help. Next time on the final episode of The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, analyzing lab results and coming to conclusions.
I said, that's the guy. And our attorney said, whoa, don't do a Boulder police on us. We don't know that. We can't jump to conclusions. And that's absolutely correct. This process that we're going through is looking at names that were brought to our attention from tipsters, from various sources. We just want to either get them off the list, say, no, that was silly, or if there's more substance there, let's dig deeper.
The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, is hosted by me, Danielle Robay. Executive produced by Dylan Howard and Matt Sprouse, and is a production of Broad and Water Studios and Endeavor Audio. Executive producers also include Tom Freestone, Doug Longini, Susan Bennett, James Robertson, and Andy Tillett. The series is written by Dominic Utten, reporting by Doug Montero. The series is mixed and engineered by Sean Kravitz and Sam Ada. There is so much more to this story, and you don't want to miss anything, I can assure you. Subscribe to The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, wherever you get podcasts. If you have any information that could help our investigators and the Ramseys identify JonBenet's killer, please help us at tips@justiceforjonbenet.com.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.